Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Feeding the Vesuvio podcast. And what a special one this one is. Alongside Serena and I, we're both honored to have on this guest. He is a Napoli club owner himself in the city of brotherly love. He is a Napoli Twitter, and I cannot stress this enough, giant. And if you're lucky enough, you'll spot him at the Gran Café L'Aquila. Everyone, please welcome on a Zuri fan, Phil. Phil, how are you?
I'm doing well, guys. Thanks for having me again. And you were
thanks for coming on.
Way too kind in that description.
Oh, not even that's not even the half of it. I could have gone way more in depth of it.
Oh yeah,
no. Phil, oh, I'm sure. Phil, no, there's more that could be said, but not necessarily good.
Phil's oh, a no, it's all good.
Yeah, in my books, maybe in other books, maybe in Inter fans and UA fans, maybe their books, but in my books, it's all good. Always good.
You know, believe it or not, there was a period not too long ago, not too many years ago, but I was hardly known on Twitter, and I would actively tell people, I guess I know in my personal life, I would tell them, don't follow me on Twitter. You're not going to see anything interesting. I really don't tweet. And here we are.
That must have been a long time ago. I feel like I've been following you for quite a while. It's been quite a few years. Because obviously when I first started on Twitter, like there wasn't – well, now there's this big community of like, you know, Napoli fans from North America. But when I first was on Twitter, it was very, rare to see, you know, people tweeting, and especially in English, about Napoli. And then one of the first people I actually found was Phil. And I think that must have been like maybe way back, like maybe 2013, 2012, like if I can remember. And then I kind of like saw Phil like, you know, grow from, you know, just tweeting about Napoli to then, you know, trolling every club.
You use that word. I don't use that word, but
it's a debate.
What's a more flattering? I don't know. Is there a more flattering term than trolling? Maybe.
Listen, I know. I know.
Debate.
People give me hell.
Razzling.
Give me hell.
Rattling.
People will give me hell for this, but I think there's a difference between trolling and banter. And
oh yeah, no, definitely.
Yeah, for sure.
Banter, yeah, no.
It's all part of the game.
Big difference. Yeah, it's part of the game. It's fair game. You know, if you're gonna dish it out, you got to take it too. And you know, we take it as well a lot from other teams and other teams' fans. So it's good to have someone dish it out a bit and you know rub people the wrong way too.
Yeah,
I'll take some of the arrows.
That's why I said Napoli Twitter giant, the legend. But yeah, I'm on the same boat as Sereno. I actually came really, really late to Napoli Twitter. I don't know why. I just, for a while, I just never had a separate Twitter account strictly dedicated to Napoli and just Calcio in general. But like, I think I started my Twitter account a couple of years ago, maybe something like that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I was looking around for people to follow. And I kept seeing the name Azuri Fan Phil, Azuri Fan Phil, Azuri Fan Phil. Like every other tweet was Azuri Fan Phil. So I'm like, it's got to be interesting, right? So let's take a look. I went to go look at your page. I started reading through your tweets. You started reading through some of your media. And I can't remember if my parents or my sister was with me, but I was laughing, like gasping for air at some point with the stuff that you would come up with.
Mission accomplished. There you go.
So immediately in my head, and plus the replies, like you'd give it and they'd dish it right back. So I was just gasping for air. Like I was watching a stand-up routine. So immediately I followed and I haven't looked back ever since.
One of my I'll leave it at this point on this topic at least, or we can continue. But one of my good friends, I met him a couple of years back. The first encounter with him, he came into the cafe and he came up to me and he said, "Are you a Zuri fan, Phil, from Twitter?" And wow. It was just, and I didn't know this guy. And it was the beginning of a beautiful friendship. So, yeah, I mean, I've had that a couple of times.
That must have been a really interesting interaction the first time. It's like, whoa, who the hell am I? Then now people are coming up to me and recognizing.
It depends on, and I almost wanted to be like, well, it depends on who's asking and, you know, whether or not you like the account.
So. I might be Israel.
Yeah.
Who do you fan for? Are you a Napoli fan? Or?
Yeah. Well, he's a Milanista, but a good friend of mine. And listen, I think you can probably tell from my Twitter, I typically get along with Milan fans.
Of course.
The axis of evil would be Roma, Juve, Inter.
Yeah,
but believe it or not,
I throw in Atalanta too. I throw them in too.
Yeah, but there's
a lot of Atalanta fans.
Atalanta Twitter.
Right? Yeah, but you know they're there. I'll throw them in.
I'm gonna start throwing in Arsenal. Never mind.
There you go. I don't like Arsenal either.
Oh my God, their fans drive me nuts on Twitter. They drive me nuts.
But all of the fan bases that I mentioned, believe it or not, I have a good amount of personal friends within each of those fan bases. Believe it or not, there are some people that are fans of those clubs that read my tweets and their heads don't explode. They don't necessarily agree with what I'm saying, but they don't have my picture on a dartboard, or at least they don't, as far as I'm aware.
I could agree. I have family. I have my own family, even in Naples, where I'm from, that are Juventini. Like, my own family, my cousins, my friends, most of all of them are, one's a Milan fan, one's a Lazio, a couple of Juve. My cousin's a Juve fan, like I mentioned. Mm-hmm. So, like, it's not that I hate them. They're my friends and family. I obviously like and love those guys, right? But
just hate their team.
It's their team, right? You said, you can have debates, you can have banter, you can argue with them, whatever. But at the end of the day, right, the way I view it, and I've seen some people, especially on Calcio Twitter and on your account too, they don't take it as a sport or as banter. It's like they take it personal to their own lives.
But so here's the way, I think this is the best way to put it. It's a vocal minority. It's sort of like if you're at a kid's birthday party and everyone's having a good time, but like three of the kids are just like screaming their lungs out, they're going to get most of the attention. It doesn't mean that the other people at the party aren't having a good time. I mean, listen, this isn't to toot my own horn, but rival fans will be like, Phil, I'm in a group message. And there are other guys that absolutely love your tweets. They're laughing their ass off at it. You know, those are the types that aren't necessarily constantly tweeting approval. You know, they may quietly like it. Meanwhile, people that take it personally, they lose their minds. They're vocal about it. And they're going to get the attention.
Of course. I'm in a few group chats with some friends and stuff. And I don't even have to mention you. I'm not even the one that shares you. But a lot of the times they'll take screenshots and they'll send me they'll be like, oh, this tweet is gold, or you know, oh, this is actually like freaking hilarious, and I'll be like, yo, that guy's I've been following him for years, man, he's hilarious, and I tell them to follow you, but they're more of the, you know, like you said, the minority that will just, you know, laugh and then just screenshot it instead of being like, you know, vocal.
And that's fine. And listen, I would tell people that are that triggered by it, and I use that word a lot, and it's accurate. I mean, just like, don't follow me. There are some of these people that constantly whine. I'm like, why are you following me?
Because I think
yeah, right. They want to complain. They want to complain.
They want to complain, but I think it's also like seeking validation. And the fact that, oh, look at me. I'm going up against a Zuri fan, Phil, all the time.
Oh, wow, yeah.
All the time. So I think it's it's a mix of validation in some weird way, as well as a need to complain. And, like, basically a boxing bag to hit every once in a while. So, yeah, you know.
All they're doing
you can give and take it, so it's all good.
They're just fueling the fire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is what it is. I've been meaning to ask you, though, because you are obviously a Napoli club owner yourself, Napoli club Philly. I've always wondered, like, I've seen the Twitter page and everything, but how did that come to be?
So in August or September, I think it was August of 2017, I was at the cafe. I would go to the cafe to watch matches, and there would occasionally be another fan there. But this one occasion, I believe it was match against Atalanta. Guy from Italy, big Napoli fan, but actually from near Livorno. He was asking me about whether or not there was a group that got together to watch the matches. Now, funny enough, I mentioned this earlier. I'm friends with a lot of Milanisti. So a number of them for the longest time would be like, Phil's going to start the Napoli club. Phil's going to start the Napoli club. And I would always put it off because I had a number of other things going on in my life that just were taking up way too much of my time to start a club. But there was something about this guy asking me about it. And I also had a bit more free time at that point. So I decided to officially found the club. So I'm, you know, you can consider me the founder and I'm the president. Ever since the summer of 2017. And so it was our inaugural season. And of course that was the Scudetto push season. So it was a hell of a time. One of our best meetups, of course, was the Juve-Napoli match with the Koulibaly goal.
Oh my God, yeah. That was amazing.
And let me tell you, what made that great was the fact that so many other fans were rooting for us and were at the cafe that day. You know, the infamous video was taken by one of the cafe owners. He's the Roma Club vice president. Next to me in the video is one of my good friends, Laziale. On the other side of me, another big Romanista. The guy that is now the Interclub president, wasn't in the view of the video, but he was there. A number of Milanisti that were probably rooting for us as much as we were rooting for ourselves. So that was really an incredible time.
It's interesting. Yeah. Like, you know what? There's a lot of parallels in your story of a formation as well as our stories of a formation. Yeah. Like, So, first of all, I didn't know that you were founded in 2017. I thought it was way before that.
I was thinking
2010, like 12.
No.
Area. Like, that's what I thought.
You built a big name for yourself pretty quickly, I guess, just because of probably the amount of people that follow you and all that. But, I would argue that Phil kind of like, you know, helped found our club in a way, because isn't he the one who sent out that tweet?
So here's the thing. I was just about to get into that.
Yeah.
So with our story, essentially what had happened was in August 2019 last year, I'm telling my side of the story here. Sereno almost has the same story, but a little bit different.
Yeah, more or less.
So we both went to Ann Arbor to watch the Napoli-Barcelona match.
Right.
But we never met each other there. I didn't know of Sereno's existence at that point. Never saw him there.
One section away from me.
It was one section away from him. Right next to him. Did not know of his existence. But I did meet a bunch of people there outside of a restaurant in the middle of downtown Ann Arbor that were from Mississauga, like right beside where Sereno lives. So we got to know each other. And one of the guys in that group, his name is Anthony D'Onofrio. And if you know the name Marco D'Onofrio, he's one of the Far From Vesuvius members.
Yeah.
He's his cousin.
Yeah.
So we started talking about, you know, just Napoli in general, excitement for the match, just small talk. And then we got onto the topic of a Napoli club. And then we looked at each other and we said, well, there's nobody in the city that we know of who has this club. And it's apparent that every person that I met that day, 90% of them were from Toronto, Woodbridge, Mississauga, Greater Toronto area.
Yeah. A lot of the GTA there. Tons.
A lot of people. And that really opened my eyes at that, because I didn't know that there were so many Napoli fans in the city. I genuinely thought, like, my dad, me, my uncle, we were like the only ones. We were the nickel and a haystack sort of thing. That's what I thought Napoli fans were in the city. But anyways, we watch the game. I go home and I don't think about the Napoli club ever since that point. It just escapes my mind. And then the tweet. I swear, if it wasn't for that tweet, we wouldn't be where we are today.
Yeah, no, no, definitely.
And I think it was...
Wait, one of my tweets?
One of your tweets?
No, no, it wasn't his tweet directly.
Somebody tweeted Danny saying, do you know anybody in Toronto that's a Napoli fan? And then you said, follow this guy and this guy and this guy.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yes. Yeah. So I actually... So funny enough, you know, you're mentioning how you thought that it was just like you and your dad. I follow a number of Canadian accounts, most around Toronto. So, you know, I've always thought of it as a like heavily popular. I know about the other clubs, but mm-hmm. I always knew of it as, you know, an area with quite a few Napoli fans. So, yeah, now I remember that one in particular, and I'm glad it was, you know, a bit of a push for you guys to start a club. It's really a rewarding experience. It takes work. Sure. You know, some clubs are different. Like the Roma Club in Philadelphia is an official Roma club. Mm-hmm. They are licensed by AS Roma. Mm-hmm. And with that comes a number of like set responsibilities if you want to continue with that status. But for example, the Milan Club and our club, we're unofficial clubs, so it still takes work, but we don't have to have like set meetings and set elections. We may get to that point down the line, but you know, at this point, it's really just a way to get people together to watch a match at the
cafe. You meet friends, you know, it's nice to watch with people who, you know, are on the same team as you. So
yeah,
we were talking about maybe it's super difficult to get into contact with Napoli, and that's something that Napoli has to, I think, work on is just their, you know, their PR. Like we want to, like, why can't, like, there's so many Napoli fans worldwide, why can't we register as an official club? It's a way of the club you know, advertising itself around the world, and then also it's probably a revenue stream as well for the club. So I don't know why it's extremely difficult from here.
Just like with a lot of things in Italy, I mean, they're stuck in almost ancient ways, and right. Unfortunately, especially Napoli, when it comes to this outreach, it seems like we're improving in certain areas, but in a lot of ways, it's still almost like the Stone Age.
Well, what really last year, going back to, you know, the American tour that they did in Michigan and in Florida, they didn't do anything for fans. Basically, they did nothing to engage with any of the fans that went there. We were at their hotel the whole day, and like it looked like there was maybe like 10 of us. It was me, a few people, like a few of my cousins, and there was some people from the New York Napoli club that we found the hotel. It was maybe 10 of us. And like a lot of them looked like they couldn't be bothered, like they didn't want to, like, you know, even want us there. Like it's just like there's only 10 of us here. Like engage with the fans a little bit. Or if they would have planned, like, you know, an open practice or something where you can go get your shirt autographed, like,
yeah,
they could have did a lot more with that. Like, I think they wasted a big opportunity there. But that just shows how far behind Napoli can be in certain ways when it comes to international fans, so to speak.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, not now.
Hold on. No.
No.
You're muted. Hold on. I'll send the chat. He's muted.
Or muted or yeah, no, not getting any.
No, he's muted. I see his microphone there. It's muted.
Okay.
Technical difficulties. 1 second. It'll be solved.
You can edit this out after, right?
Yeah, I can. Yeah.
Post. Can you hear me?
Yeah,
now there we go.
All right. Sorry. Yeah.
It's okay.
So in Miami, they did have an open practice, but it really wasn't publicized. Mm-hmm. And I ended up finding out the hotel they were staying in, and some other fans found out as well. So that night, we were camped out of the bar where Ancelotti and some of the assistants were playing cards. And we stayed there for like 2 hours. So my girlfriend came down to Miami with me. We worked it in, you know, obviously I was going down to see the match, but we worked it into like be an anniversary trip. So she tagged along to the hotel, and she's like falling asleep on one of the couches. There are some other random fan. There were some Juventini that were hanging out, waiting to meet Ancelotti. So he comes out like sort of around midnight because like we all agreed, okay, we are not going to risk it by going in to this like serious card match that, that they're playing. So we're going to wait till they come out. So they stagger out before they go up to bed. We were able to catch them. But if it wasn't for that, there wasn't really anything organized to meet any of them. And then we're, you know, we were leaving the hotel. I'm on cloud nine because I got to meet them. And earlier that night, I met Tommaso in the elevator. I saw Ospina walking around. But when we were leaving the hotel, De Laurentiis is in the lobby taking pictures with this family, definitely from Italy. So I was able to grab a picture with him when they were done. I think he was probably ready for bed. He wasn't too energetic. But I mean, that was it was an amazing experience for me. But it would have been nice if more of the fans had a chance. You know, it could have been something small. Even quite frankly, we had a supporter section lined up. I had a connection at Hard Rock Stadium that set us up with a section right behind the bench, which was amazing. It would have taken minimal effort for the team to like come over to the section before or after the match. And they didn't even do that.
I was disappointed, but very disappointed in that way. And so even like how you're saying, we were in the hotel, they had a security guard there. He was like, rounder guy, bald, and like he, like when we would see the players, like he was letting only, and this is when we first got there, he was only letting like kids go up to the players to go take pictures. It's like, and he wouldn't even let me. I'm like, I just drove 7 hours from Toronto. You're not gonna let me go take a picture? And yeah. I think Alan and Milik saw, and Alan pointed me out, and Alan came, and he's like, no, I'm taking a picture with this guy. Like, so I guess a few players. We're seeing like how stupid it was. So, just, you know, other teams, I don't think that would happen. And I think, but plus other teams would probably be more organized, you know,
right
from the top to plan out those interactions between the fans and the
players.
That's
the big thing. I mean, so the IFTV guys, they came down to Miami. They also went out to Ann Arbor. Mm-hmm. They were telling me before the match that they were working with Napoli for something, you know, in the lead up to both of the matches, something promotional. Mm-hmm. And then it all fell apart. And I'm sorry to say it, but that gets chalked up to a lack of professionalism.
Oh yeah.
On the part of the club.
You know, the funny thing is, far from Vesuvius, same thing with them. I was talking to Marco, a couple months back, and he said the same thing. He wanted to do something for the fans in Ann Arbor when they were hosting the fans at Michigan Stadium, and they were talking like, see, the way I understand it, the way Napoli has a PR team, it's not a direct PR team from the club. It's a third party that runs the PR. Stupid. I don't know why, but that's something for a different day. But essentially it's almost like that third party doesn't really understand or care, or just lacks professionalism to actually make the effort to open up essentially what is an untapped market for Napoli. I say this every single time, and I think I've said it to Sereno millions of times. Canada and the United States are untapped markets.
For Napoli, 100,000%.
100%. Nobody sells Napoli shirts in the city, and the one place that does sells them for a little bit, it's a little bit pricier, but you know what? It's worth it.
But it's super hard for them, even the stores, to import Napoli stuff. I know I saw Napoli, exactly. they opened up a store on Amazon, but I think that's just in the States. It's not even in Canada.
In the United States, in Canada, like, yeah.
These are things that are really simple to do. And what I didn't even know what you just said was a thing, that they third-party their PR. I think
from what I understand.
I think it comes down to one word, lazy. They're just lazy. That's... That whole trip into the States was very lazily like planned. Like, you know, I feel
you could tell it was the first time they were doing it in decades. I mean, before that, the last time that the team came over was in 82 or 83. Yeah. Obviously, a totally different world then. So, I mean, for all intents and purposes, this was like their first trip to the United States. And it was just...
Nowadays, but, like, you hire people... If you hire the proper people that are on point, that, like, you know, that's their profession, they're into planning, right. then you know, what could go wrong? Like, it doesn't have to be like, it's not like you have the same person working at the club for the last like 40 years that just decided to come to America. Now you hire people, you're a big club, you make lots of money, you brag about making lots of money and not being in a deficit. Invest. I think two areas where not best to invest is into their youth, into an academy, and into their PR. Like, definitely, that's two areas where De Laurentiis, if he's going to keep the club, has to put some money into, for sure.
But here's the thing about this too, right? So they did this tour in the United States. They went to Miami and they went to Michigan. All right. I wasn't at the Miami game, but from what I heard, it was a great time for all Napoli fans there. And I did watch a portion of the game online. I couldn't hear the commentators. All I heard was Sarò Conte over and over and over again from the support section. When I was in Ann Arbor, Michigan, there are only, today, what, 5,000 fans?
Yeah, it was all Barcelona.
We
were out singing them, for sure.
I can guarantee you for 90 minutes, we outsang them.
Oh, yeah.
5,000 of us compared to this other 60,000 that were in the stadium. So you as the director, as the president, De Laurentiis, or even the PR team, you look around you. You have fans camping outside bars, hotels, waiting to see the players, the coaches, everyone. You hear the fans in the stadium. Not even in Italy. You hear fans in the United States and people from Canada coming over, singing songs that you would hear in the San Paolo, in the Curva A and Curva B. Don't you think that would resonate a little bit in your head and saying, hey, we have something here. Let's take advantage of it. Now, in terms of – sorry, go ahead.
The sad thing is that coming to North America – and I don't want to just settle, but the fact that the team even came to North America was like
– was pretty
that was beyond the gift,
me. Yeah.
You know? Don't expect much more. You're lucky that we even came, because for the longest time, De Laurentiis, who, by the way, I think gets plenty of unfair criticism, but there are fair criticisms of the guy. For the longest time, it was, it's too much travel. We're just not going to take the time and effort to do that. So it was sort of like, well, we at least came, happy, and we played Barcelona.
I know. I had a conversation with one of the security guards when I was at the hotel, and he said that the only reason why Napoli came was because Barcelona asked them.
I believe that.
They specifically asked Napoli out of all the clubs, do you want to come?
And Barcelona dictated all of the terms, really. I mean, it was it was run by Barcelona. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, listen, I'm glad that it happened. I don't know when the hell the next time will happen, pandemic stuff aside. Because I was thinking last summer, I'm like, we're probably not going to see them for several more years after the way this was done. I'm at least glad that we could see them. But whenever they do return, it needs to be done better.
Of course. And I think they got to pick their cities a little bit better. I know it was Barca that picked the cities, and they're going to pick the bigger stadiums. But if you would put like Napoli in New York,
yep,
or New Jersey,
MetLife Stadium would have been fantastic.
You would get a lot more Napoli fans, because there's tons of.
We would not have half of MetLife, but we'd certainly have more. And listen, we had a good crowd down in Miami.
Oh, yeah, you guys did. But, a lot of people traveled for.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my God. We had guys come in from California. I mean, most of the people I would say came from the East Coast, but people made a trip out of it.
Yeah.
If we would have had it at MetLife or somewhere in the Northeast, quite frankly, or even in Toronto.
Oh yeah, definitely.
a lot. Thought the Sky Dome would have been a pretty good, the Rogers Center for people. Sky Dome, Rogers Center, same thing. That would have been a pretty good venue. It's about 60,000 seats.
But they
transformed it to a soccer field.
But the AstroTurf, that's the problem. No,
it's grass.
Don't like to play on.
It's grass.
They didn't put
it's
grass. Grass.
It's grass. The Argos played on grass, and so did TFC at a time.
But that's at grass. That's not.
You're talking about BMO is grass too.
No, I know BMO's grass, but Rogers Center is Astro. It's AstroTurf.
No.
Just the infield, they made dirt.
No, okay. The Rogers Center, they changed it because the Argos were playing there too, and they needed grass. They changed it to grass. I'm almost 99% sure it's grass.
But I would weigh in, but I know nothing about MLS or the Canadian Football League or whatever.
I don't know anything about the Canadian Football League.
I go to TFC games, but
TFC games aren't even that bad. They're not even that bad. Like the atmosphere there is actually it's decent. Like here's the thing. TFC.
TFC. TFC has a good atmosphere. They had a few fan clubs that were really supporter clubs that were really, really good. But I think a few of them got banned. I think the last couple of years. I don't know why. Why did they ban them?
I have no idea either. But the one thing I do know is I don't know about Philadelphia or the United States. But the soccer culture here, especially in Toronto, it's really big. Really big. And I think that could be attributed to most of the city being a multicultural ethnic, where you have the Italians, the Portuguese, Eastern Europeans.
Everywhere.
West Indians, African. The city's diverse. You have multiple different nationalities, and all of them, mostly some part of their culture revolves around soccer. So that's why I think Toronto, we got lucky, and Montreal in some aspects too, we got lucky with the sporting culture around soccer, which for most of Canada really doesn't exist, especially in the prairies and the West. So I'm not sure about Philadelphia, if you want to touch in on that, or the United States.
Yeah, I mean, we have some diehard fans that follow the local team, the Philadelphia Union. By the way, they play about a half hour outside of Philadelphia, but still the Philadelphia Union. I have several friends that are like diehard fans. But the culture, this goes without saying, is obviously nothing compared to almost like anywhere else in the world. And probably it probably doesn't even compare to Toronto. And I'm not saying that as necessarily a knock on those guys. I just don't think it will ever be able to be close. And I think it tries too hard to replicate, especially what is in Europe. MLS is just not my thing. I don't think I will ever be into it. I've gone to a few matches, and it's like, it was like something to do with friends. I was basically dragged to them. But it's just not my thing.
Yeah, but
I'll go out to games. Like I support TFC. Like most people in Toronto, like to support the Toronto teams. Like we do have a lot of compared to other cities in Canada. Like we have basically like a team in all of the top five leagues in North America. So a lot of people in Toronto will support the local team. But obviously, it's not the first team in Toronto. But when they make the playoffs, or when there's a big name that comes through, like a Zlatan, or like a big player, a big game, like they've packed the stadium pretty easily. So, and like I said, with the supporter groups, there are some diehard fans, and they actually do create quite a good atmosphere. You know, they have like fireworks and like the flares and everything. So it's fun to go out to the games, but it's nothing compared to a European match.
Yeah, of course not. But like apart from TFC, right? Even if we just take out MLS from this aspect, soccer culture in Canada, like you said, you played soccer, right?
You just gotta be here. Soccer. You just gotta be here for the World Cup, dude. And during the World Cup,
yeah, exactly.
It's like, dude, any team wins, like Ghana wins, Colombia wins, and you hear horns everywhere, like as if like the whole city's Colombian or the whole city's like, you know, Italian or the whole city's Portuguese.
The joke in Toronto is that when World Cup comes around, nobody's Canadian. That's the joke in Toronto. But yeah, he's right. Like that's what I meant by soccer culture. I'm taking MLS out of this. I'm taking like even down to like Pee Wee soccer all the way up through the soccer academies. And just the idea of the sport in this country, I feel like it doesn't get as enough recognition in the United States because obviously United States has football, football, basketball, baseball, right? They're competing with the top three in the United States. But I think that they should start focusing more on soccer. And if it wasn't evident, the U.S. national team losing to, who was it? Trinidad and Tobago for not qualifying. Yeah, I can't remember who it was. That should be like a wake-up call for U.S. soccer and the culture in general, in my opinion.
North American teams, no matter what the sport is, they don't like to lose. So I think that you'll probably see a lot of attention focused to developing more players. Which, I mean, the States do have, you know, who's on Chelsea? Pulisic?
Pulisic.
Yeah. He's a good player.
Yeah.
But if you look at North America in a whole, you know, Canada with Alphonso Davies, that's an incredible story just in itself. Like, you know, North America is starting to develop, like, you know, top class players that play in Europe, which is something that we haven't seen for a while. So, I mean, you can look at the positives, but yeah, definitely the American teams in any sport don't enjoy losing, you know.
Yeah, but soccer here is seen and really, I mean, it's changed somewhat recently, but for decades, it's always been the sport the kids play growing up. It gives them a chance to, you know, run around, chase a ball. And then also it's generally seen as a girl's sport. Now, again, recent years, that's change, but yeah, I mean, historically the stereotype in the United States is it's a kid's sport and it's a girl's sport.
It's interesting.
I don't think soccer will ever really catch on here to the extent that football does, basketball, baseball. Because soccer is seen as like this slow sport. Now you're gonna say, okay, well, so is baseball, but soccer is a slow sport that doesn't have stoppages. You know, here, sporting culture, when someone is watching a game, you know, they want to be able to get up and get their snacks during the commercial break or whatever. You get that a lot in baseball and the other sports, or the other sports are faster paced, but still more stoppages. Here, you know, you got the 45 minutes solid, and then you got the halftime break, but, it says something about American sports culture, and I just don't think it will ever really catch on here.
Yeah, maybe not anytime soon, seems like, but yeah. I think that's just nowadays, you know, especially younger people, like the attention span, like you need something fast and like, you know, that catches like that, like 10, 15 second window, like football, like, you know, you have a quick snap, you have a quick play, like, soccer is, you know, I feel like you have to kind of grow up with it to appreciate the game, to appreciate, like, you know, the small things, like, you know, someone dribbling someone or like a good build up, like, you know, like we appreciate that. But someone who doesn't know the game is just going to see, why are they passing so much? Like, go to the net, go shoot, like, you know. I don't think that's just an American thing. I think that's just like now young people who are looking to choose a sport, they want to, like something fast paced. Like,
you know. Yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth, Strano. Like, I played for most of my life, I played hockey, as a Canadian does. I played football for 4 years. I played soccer, played rugby, all these. I played a whole bunch of sports, baseball too. But yeah, Strano was right in the fact that the sports that I enjoyed playing the most, well, excluding soccer from the fact, but the sports that I enjoyed playing the most, hockey, football, hockey, football, and rugby, they were all fast-paced, high-intensity, hard-hitting, like on the ice, off the ice, you're intense to go out there, play as hard as you can, 10-15 seconds off the ice, get the line switch.
Yep, right? Get the line switch right there.
So for me as a kid, it was mentally stimulating to get on the ice getting hyped up, knowing that coach is calling second line. I get to go out there now. I get to go out and put up my 15 seconds of work in and come back off. And especially the parents, they enjoyed watching that. But like Sereno said, I also grew up with soccer in my household. My dad played soccer. He coached it. I played. I coach. So just having – and plus – big Napoli fans in our house. Every Sunday, the game is always on the TV. So just having that as well and understanding the game, which is a crucial point in soccer, it's fundamental to understand the game and understand the tactics and how it's played. That's what gets people involved. And if you can't get past that point, then there's no way you're ever going to get into it. Yeah, so you take it as face value and just hope that one day that something changes in the U.S. But let's get back to a more familiar topic. Who wants to talk about some Mercato right now?
Oh, who doesn't?
Oh, let's start off with Messi Inazzurro. Tweet it in existence.
Tweet it into existence, yeah. Sure, you could try.
Yeah, it's not happening. I know in my heart of hearts it's not happening.
I'm in a group chat. And this evening it really exploded about this topic. And I don't think anyone really believes there's any chance of it happening, but it's still a discussion point. And I'm already irritated with it. I've been irritated with any of the Mercato talk for a while now. I'm at the point as a fan where it becomes so exhausting twice a season. Just get me to the matches. Frankly, after the James Rodriguez drama from last summer, which was something I think people know, I was personally pretty invested in. I really wanted him to come to Napoli.
Yeah, he's a brand. That's it too, right? Like it would have. I think James would have done well in Naples, but I guess everything happens for a reason. But yeah, I could see how that whole saga, like he's coming, he's not coming, or he's on his way. Contract's already signed, and
especially that one Twitter account. I can't remember the name for the life of me.
God, I blocked them.
But
I remember the name, but I won't repeat it.
Okay, well, whoever it was, excuse my language, Jenna, but fuck them. I hate them with a passion.
Well, they basically trolled us. And even at the end. It was a social experiment or some shit like that. I'm like,
they admitted it. I mean, and they said that any of the other news, which they were describing as inside scoops, they really went off of intuition. But you know, people will bring up that account, say, "Oh, Phil, you got invested in this, insider account." It wasn't just that account. I mean, there were a number of things pointing to it.
Yeah.
If I was stupid enough to just believe this random Twitter account, we don't know any of the journalists behind it, anything like that, then it would be on me. But I got invested for a bunch of other reasons, and it ended up, and I believed up until like the very end. I truly believed it was going to happen. And if it would be a last day thing, I thought, the club purposely planned this, and then it just all fell apart.
It made sense just because Ancelotti is in love with James, right? And even now, I think he's heavily rumored to be going to Everton to link up with Ancelotti. Right. But mind you, for 15 million euros, not the 30 something last year, which is hilarious.
But you know what? We learn that he still has his struggles. So, like you said, maybe it's better that it didn't happen. But even that case aside, so much of this could just be so draining. I just found myself in this latest window not as invested. I'm becoming one of these fans where it's like, you know what, whatever happens. If we get heavily linked with someone that I really like, will I get excited and follow a bit more? Sure. But anymore, it's like, Just get me to opening day.
Phil, I wish I could say the same for myself. I have Stockholm syndrome with this, with Mercato time, because every time I go onto Twitter or something and I see the new tweets come out, Jeremy Boga is close, Sergio Reguilon, 25 million, all these things that look promising. And Taliafico, I love Ajax is my second team. I love Taliafico. But I'm looking at these things, and in my mind, in my heart of hearts, I know some of these aren't going to happen just because of the past that we have. But there's still, I don't know why, but there's still that little bit of hope left in me that always takes over. And I just, I like, what's a good word for it? I obsess over it sometimes where I'm like, okay, you have the money. You have 160 million euros, whatever it is, in your bank accounts. You owe no debts. You can't pay 25 for Reguilon. You paid the same amount for Verdi, and look at how it turned out, right? But this is a promising player, and you need it, that you need at that position. Pay the 25.
And he's going to
pay the money.
Go up in value, you know, based
exactly
on his age and
just
everything.
Pay the 25.
But I don't think you can say, and this is one area where I think fans are pretty divided, though most people would say ADL is too stingy. He has spent some serious money. Like, listen, this Osimhen deal, we spent a lot. And I'm someone that thought probably not worth the risk. But they took the risk, hopefully high reward. I mean, but you can't say that he didn't spend in that regard. Doesn't mean that he shouldn't spend in other areas, because we need it. We need that reinforcement. But I just personally, and you guys may disagree, I just haven't liked the narrative that he is too stingy. He never spends. He's never going to get us over that hump because of that. I don't think that's entirely fair.
I mean, he's very he's calculated. That's what he is. I think if you could use the word, he takes calculated risks and things like that. But, you know, we do have a lot of, I don't agree with his whole thing that, like, okay, now we have to sell some players to buy some players. You can buy the player and then sell the other players. Like, it doesn't, like we lost out on that defender from Lille, Gabriel, because he's waiting to sell Koulibaly or to sell this player. It's like, if you're going to sell him anyways, which I think he's going to be sold, why not just put out the money and then sell and then recoup the money off the sale? So I thought that
fair.
Was
really dumb. That's fair.
You're gonna now you're probably gonna sell Koulibaly and replace him with Pasta Papadopoulos from Arsenal or whatever the heck his last name is, because
Socrates.
Yeah,
I think we're just going with the first name.
Yeah.
Like, you know, this doesn't make any sense. Like, I don't agree with him in that sense. I agree with, you know, taking calculated risks, and then, you know, you're not going to spend money that you don't have. But if you know that you're going to be making a few sales and you're going to have that capital, like, just don't waste an opportunity to grab a player that you like. Like, I think that's stupid.
But having said that, right, you're taking calculated risks, but at the same time, if with a couple more signings, I truly believe that we are a Scudetto competing team in this upcoming season.
I think two more signings. I think you need a left back.
Exactly.
I think you need a winger. That's it.
Amen.
I disagree. Maybe you might not even need a winger. I think you need another maybe quality center midfielder. Yeah.
Especially with the formation change. They want a 4-2-3-1, so another center mid would be ideal. But here's the thing, right? So you're saying he takes calculated risks, and yes, he does. And I'm kind of on the fence about whether he's too stingy or not. I wouldn't say that he's overly stingy, but at the same time, he misses out on opportunities because of his stinginess. Oh, yeah. So it, like you said, it's calculated, right? But if you're making the sales, Alan is close to Everton, 30 million. All right. Something like that. Eunice was just contacted by, I think, Leverkusen. Another 10, 15, right?
Probably,
yeah. Maximovic might go another 10, 15, right? This is all money just being collected, just being added on into the books.
Yep.
And if you know that, and if Gattuso's telling you, hey, listen, we need some reinforcements in these areas, and they're good players that can reinforce them, a.k.a. Reguillon, Nandez, Boga, and a couple of other players, right? If you can fill in the roles that we're missing and have a deep rotation squad, other than Inter, I think we have the squad, we have what it takes, and we have the squad and the depth to win the Scudetto if we make those signings. I think this year Juventus is going to have trouble, especially with Pirlo being the new head coach. He doesn't even have a license. Who's going to coach them, right? They're going to have trouble at the start of the season. You got to take advantage of that. Definitely. Off the start. On September 19th, whenever they start playing, you hit the ground running and you don't stop. You put your pedal to the metal and you just keep it there and you keep going.
And but that was supposed to be the case last season. And we know the weird start that we had.
Yeah.
If not for that. And by the way, I don't even really think that it was the way that Juve match ended pretty much summed up how the season was going to go. But I don't think that's what killed us. It was a few weeks later, and I don't even want to bring up
a Roma
week disaster. Yeah. But last season was that opportunity with the experienced coach, and I believe he deserves some of the blame, but I still think most of the blame falls on the team. But whatever the case, we now have a good coach now, and we can take advantage of the fact that Pirlo is just being thrown into this, and Inter have their issues, of course. But even if Inter are at the top of their game, there is no reason why it shouldn't be a three-horse race for the Scudetto, at least. I do like, though, that Gattuso came out, I think it was in today's press conference or yesterday, saying, you know, the goal is to qualify for Champions League next season. I think that's a fair thing to say. I believe that we should be fighting for the Scudetto, but I do believe that it's one thing what the fans believe and maybe what the coach will publicly say, because we know what comes with it. If Gattuso says, yeah, we're absolutely fighting for the Scudetto, you know, that ends up triggering the media. And then, like it or not, this team still has a bit of a mentality issue when it comes to that goal. So I think saying, you know, we got to qualify for Champions League, I think that's a fair thing to say. But there is no reason without, with a couple of good signings, why we couldn't be in that race.
I don't know, most definitely. I think if we go based off who we're linked with, if we get a few of those players, and then even after selling the players that we're, you know, allegedly selling, we have a very deep squad with a very good rotate. Like, you could rotate that squad and beat most teams in the league, even off of your bench. Like, especially in your attacking options seem like they're infinite. You got Patania, who I think is going to be a really good player coming off the bench. Lozano on the wing, Politano on the wing. If you get Boga on the wing, like, you have a really, really deep team, like two or three lineups that could beat majority of the teams in the league. So
let's not forget about the midfield either. Our midfield's pretty deep too.
Yeah.
Zielinski, Lobotka.
Our midfield had a bad season last season. Like, in terms of offensively, like, we had a very, like, I feel like that's where Napoli kind of lagged, is we lacked a lot of goals that we used to get from our midfielders. So I think that's something that you got to keep an eye out for next year, is to see if we can improve on, you know, goals coming from other players other than the strikers, right? So, but we do have midfielders, definitely.
Fabian. I think last year was just – sorry to interrupt you, but I think, like you said, but I think last year was just a one-off season. to be quite honest.
Hopefully.
That's what I think. But continue with what you're saying. Sorry about that.
Yeah, so Fabian is class, Zielinski's class. Like, it would be nice to get one more, like, you know, high-tier midfielder. But, yeah, we definitely have capable players in the midfield that shouldn't have any problems offensively. So hopefully last year was a one-off. I mean, I think if we don't have the whole mutiny and that whole saga that happened, maybe Ancelotti's still here. Maybe we, you know, steer the course. But yeah, I don't know who you could blame for that. I mean, personally, I think that mostly lies on the players, but obviously the players have to be fed up with something to go to that extreme to do the mutiny against the club. But I think just based off of that, like, as long as we don't have another mutiny this year, you know, knock on wood, we should be in the clear, at least
without that
qualifying for champions,
top four.
Yeah,
definitely. Or at least, you know, it would have been very close.
Yeah, that set our season back a lot.
And Lazio and Atalanta. Mm-hmm. But I mean, really, like, last season was the season that we should have been right in the Scudetto race.
Yep.
But again,
we had the team. Yeah, for sure.
We could do it this season. The pieces can, again, you get a few more good signings, and the pieces really are there. So,
yeah. And you also have a motivated coach like Gattuso's.
Right.
I'm not knocking Ancelotti. Like, Ancelotti's won everything, but Gattuso has something to prove. And you saw that, like, you know, the second half of the season, like, he's hungry. Like, he wants to, you know, he's a motivated.
He's got a trophy under his belt now.
And now he has a trophy. Yeah, he has a trophy under his belt.
On one of the worst seasons that we've had in at least 10 years.
Yep. And look at who we had to beat to get that title. I mean, listen, you'll have some of the fans say, you know, come on, it's Coppa Italia, which I don't think that. Obviously, it's not Scudetto level, but
a title is something,
especially when, you know, we're in this era of Juve domination. Every other team should be, you know, clawing for Coppa Italia at the very least.
Mm-hmm.
We had to knock out the defending champions, who were in the midst of a great run themselves. Beat Inter, and then beating Juve in the final. And we played well in that final.
Really well.
So, you know, I think that means something. I think that's a building block. I think next season Europa League should be a legit priority too. There's no reason why we can't have a deep run in Europa League.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think we will get top four, but let's say we have another weird season and also the competition has improved. Maybe we're not top four, but you win Europa League. It's not just winning a trophy. It gets you into the Champions League for the next season. So
now here's the thing, right? Like, you got to make a decision. You either have to go for Europa or you go for Scudetto, and it's a tough call to make. Like, what would you rather go for?
I don't think so. We have. I don't think so. I think
Europa's a longer competition with a lot more teams.
I mean, I think they can compete on all fronts if they have a deep team like what it looks like they're going to be having. Like, you have a team that will. You know, in the early rounds of Europa League, you usually don't face any big teams. You could probably start, you know, you can rotate your squad. And then once you start getting into the quarterfinals and the semis, then you start playing your first team, guys.
Like, yeah.
I don't think you have to, you know, X one out to focus on the other one. I think that they can easily compete in both competitions. Well,
and in 2017, 2018, we did have the issue with not having a deep bench. And Saudi just not
rotating at all.
Rotate with what we did have. You know, he didn't have a lot, but I mean, the guy is pretty stubborn. So that season, it made sense to me for us to crash out of Europa League. And I know people mocked us for it, but it made sense given the circumstances. But I think next, you know, this upcoming season, we can continue to compete on both fronts.
Yeah, no, see, here's the thing about the two. Like, we had one missing, in my opinion, we had one real missing piece, aside from the fact that Koulibaly didn't have a great year, and the Koulibaly-Manolas pair-up didn't work out in the ways we thought it would. Hopefully that changes for next season. But the major change that we should have this year is our finishing. Our striker up top. Right now, we have a young striker that looks promising. I've seen a couple clips of him at the Retiro right now, and he looks good.
I've watched the whole, like, the last few days, I've literally, like, went on Calcio Napoli 24, and I've watched
the
whole training session. And he scored, he looks like, four good. Or five goals in training today. Like, anything in the 18-yard box, like, he's...
It's in the back of the net.
Yeah, so
That's what I'm excited to see. Plus, if, let's say, he has a bad game, Petagna, get on there. Petagna can change a game.
Yeah.
He has. He played 15 goals with Spal, changed a lot of their games. Petagna's another one to look out for.
What I like about Petagna, and people have given me a hard time for liking the guy, but I think why he could be so important for us is I have wanted us to have a big striker, a big guy up top for the longest time because, listen, I know people love Mertens, and I love the guy too, but he's been with us for years. I think the problem is enough of the teams have figured out some of our smaller guys. Mm-hmm. So we don't have a big target guy up top. Now we can. And Petagna should be able to finish off some of those smaller teams. Again, the rotation is going to be key.
Exactly.
You have a big bully up top, you know, that's a couple more points that we have struggled to get at times in, you know, what ended up being critical matches, you know, where we're settling for a draw against Sassuolo too many seasons. You know,
they all count.
There's a few more points now. So yeah,
exactly. And not only that, like, especially with like what you said about Mertens, when Reno finally released that he wanted to play in a 4-2-3-1, it was heaven on earth. Especially with Sereno. I know how much you love the 4-2-3-1.
I always thought that made the most sense for Napoli.
I'm 100% in agreement with you, because now Mertens, who plays as a traditional false nine striker, you drop him down into a number 10 role. He free roams around the pitch. He's going to cause a lot of problems. Defenses are going to be scared. Yeah. Not only that, now you have Osimhen, who's fast. He's also strong, and he can finish up top. Now your defense has to worry about, what do I have to worry about more? A playmaker who's free roaming in between our lines and can cut us through at any moment he wish, or a strong striker up front who one ball over the top can finish it in the back of the net. Yeah. Not only that, now you start have to start thinking about, okay, well, we have Insigne on this side. He's a really good playmaker. And then we have, let's say, you put Lozano or Politano, both of them really fast and can cut through your lines in a second if you just switch off like that. Plus,
I think Lozano will have a fantastic season next year. I just want to throw that out there. Like, I think now that he's going to have a full training camp, and then you saw glimpses last season, I think that Lozano can be a big player for us. And even under, you know, what a lot of people don't, you know, take into consideration with Lozano is if you look at PSV games back when he was with PSV, he's amazing at, like, you know, setting people up in the box, like his crosses, like he got a ton of assists too. So, like you were saying, having a Petagna or having like an Osimhen who can find the spaces in the 18-yard box and just capitalize, I think that's going to benefit, you know, a player like Lozano too, who I think, you know, a lot of people were tough on him. I mean, he had a tough first season, but I mean, the squad had a tough first season. I mean, imagine coming into a new country, you don't know the language, you don't know the league. Then there's
the
this
record signing
and the coach leaves. It's a lot, like, and you're the record signing. Yeah, so I'm looking for him to have a bounce back year with us.
I think he would, and I don't think that it was fair, the amount of criticism he received, because it's not like the guy was a consistent starter.
Exactly.
You know, it would be one thing if he started most of the matches and wasn't performing. I could deal with some of these criticisms. See, some of these guys get on his case, and I'm like, based on what? And you know, the weird thing about Lozano is it's a good weird thing. He has scored on each of his debuts. I mean, this guy scored the goal that really brought us back into the match against Juve. I mean, at Juventus Stadium, that's a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know. I feel like too many people just, like, threw him away. So scored a big goal against Red Bull, the match at San Paolo. You know, he's had some important goals this season.
He's a quality player. And I think, like, you know, look at Mertens when Mertens first came to Serie A. Serie A is a hard league, like, especially for attacking players.
Yeah.
Hard league. Like, it's you don't have that freedom and that time and space. Like, most teams defend very well in Serie A. So it takes strikers that have success in other leagues, you know, even high-end strikers. Even Ronaldo struggles, admitted that it is really hard to score in Italy. Yeah. It takes some time to adjust, to get used to the league, and especially, to get used to, you know, the marking and everything.
Especially, like, the lower-level teams, too, mid-table, bottom-half teams, they focus strictly on defense. They focus strictly on not conceding a goal. That's why we have such a tough time against Sassuolo, because they just play defense. They put 10 guys behind the ball, and they don't make you move.
Right? Yep.
Right? Like, all those teams, you have to kind of account for them. And this is why I'm kind of skeptical for Osimhen's first year, too, is because defending in the French league and defending in Serie A, two completely different beasts.
And listen, for this position, so much is riding on that position, especially for us. People know our struggles. When you come in and you're a massive signing, and you're totally new to the league, that's why I think it's a big risk.
Mm-hmm.
I obviously hope that he proves most of us. I think it's fair to say that most fans were skeptical of the signing, at least for that amount.
It's a big
investment for someone that's not, you know, not really proven.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, we hope he proves us wrong.
I'll be honest. Like, looking at his even like. He's got to keep in mind, he's young. He's, like, what, 20 years old?
Yeah, 21. He's my age.
His, like, even during his interviews, like, he's really, like, it seems like he's got a really, like a cool, calm, level-headed, like, and even when I was watching the training sessions, he has a very high, you could tell, like, the players that have a high IQ for the game, like, there was times when he was, like, tracking back, like, kind of like how Cavani used to, and that got me excited. He was coming back to the defense, winning the ball and then starting the counterattack the other way. So I don't know. I feel like for players with a high IQ, I don't think it's going to take him too long to start scoring goals in Serie A, to be honest. But obviously in the beginning, you know, if he starts to struggle, like, you know, you can't freak out. You got to give him a grace period, which I don't think they gave Lozano. But mind you, Lozano didn't start all the time because you had Caleon every game starting for Napoli. So hopefully with Osimhen, it's more faster of a, you know, it's more of a him hitting the ground running, like, than us, you know, sweating and panicking, right?
Yeah. Wondering if we're going to hit another post next time we hit tag.
We hit a bunch of posts in practice, and every time that Napoli was hitting a post, you can hear the reporters saying, it's okay, better we hit the posts in practice.
Right. Instead of a record-setting, I think it was literally a record-setting.
Record-setting, season. 50.
Yeah. We in the most in Europe, I think. We hit the most in Europe. That's incredible.
Like, there was times where it was harder to hit the post or crossbar than it was to score. And yet we still managed
to hit
the crossbar or post.
Arkadiusz.
Yeah, Milik with who was it? What team was it?
Every team was.
Every team. But, like, there was one in specific where he headed the ball and it was, honest to God, 3 yards away, and he hit the crossbar. I can't remember what game it was. Well, I couldn't believe my eyes.
In the friendly in Miami, I mean, when I say that we were bewildered when he, now listen, it's a friendly, but we really wanted to win.
Of course,
it's against Barcelona. When he tried to chest the ball and it went over.
Oh, my God.
When all he had to do was just nod it in. I just remember looking around. I mean, I was stunned.
Yeah.
Even for Milik, that was, like, just stunning.
I mean, it's hard to score when you're on your ass all the time. Whenever you're in the 18-yard box, every time you get a chance, it seems like he's shooting from his ass all the time. Mind you, Messi did it, and he scored a really nice goal against us. But I think only Messi
can score
from his ass.
I was about to say that.
Yeah.
But you're talking about Messi now, and there's a big difference between Messi and Milik. But anyways, you know, I just
a few letters. For me,
I just hope that, like I said, next season. Obviously, right now, I'm gonna try to be like you, Phil. I'm gonna stop paying attention to Mercato. Especially because it might be easier now because I didn't have school, right? But my school has started up this week, and we really start getting into it next week. So I guess because I didn't have anything to do during this time period, that's what I focused on the most, and I kind of, like I said, obsessed over it at some points. Like Serrano can tell you in the chat, there was points where I was going off, unloading all the frustration I had about the Mercato. But anyways, having said that, I'm going to try to be like you. I'm just whatever happens, happens. All I care about is that on September 19th, whatever that first game, that first match is, we better hit the ground running. And like I said, don't keep the foot. Just keep going.
Not the post.
Just keep going. Exactly.
I have one question to ask for everyone. Do you think there's even a remote possibility that De Laurentiis would consider on a free transfer?
Yes.
Putting it off for Messi.
Yes, I already know where you're going with it.
You think so?
I have hope.
I don't think he would.
On a free transfer.
I don't think he'd even want the aggravation that would surround that. Because even though I think he does enjoy to an extent the back and forth with some of the fans, you know, he's our Cavani. I think he liked that to a degree.
Yeah.
I don't think he would want the backlash about getting our hopes up about that for something that, you know, there's a less than 1% chance of it happening.
I mean, apparently, when Ronaldo was signed by Juve, he was offered to Napoli before he was signed by Juve. And De Laurentiis confirmed that, but he said, "Oh, I'd have to I'd go bankrupt if I had to buy Ronaldo."
Yeah, and listen, was he offered stuff?
He was offered. That's what De Laurentiis said. De Laurentiis said that.
I don't know. That kind of seems like a big fish story, like a fisherman's tale.
I don't think De Laurentiis is a liar, to be honest. He's a minion.
I mean, I could see because of Ancelotti and Ronaldo maybe wanting the challenge, even though he ended up taking the easier way out, but wanting the challenge of, you know,
was it though?
Making himself, you know, the true legend of the game. He would be able to bring a Scudetto to Napoli. Then he gets to claim that he is the greatest of all time. But I mean, it wasn't going to happen, obviously. And the thing with Messi, I said this in a group message that I'm in. Messi will want to go somewhere where there is a team totally built up for him. One of the super clubs. He's not going to leave Barcelona to go somewhere where there would be even more pressure and fewer resources, you know, and he's constantly compared to Maradona. He's not going to want that much more on his shoulders going to Naples. I mean, you know, he come to the team. And everyone's thinking, okay, well, yeah, now you have to win the Scudetto. And then imagine he doesn't. And then that's even more on his case. He's going to end up at City, maybe PSG. That's where it makes sense. And he'll look to redeem it. He'll get to say that he won in a different league and, you know, possibly wins the Champions League.
I mean, there's always a possibility that he doesn't win. Well, the expectations are different. If you join a Manchester City, your expectation is to win the Champions League, which is probably the hardest trophy to win in the world. Whereas if you would join a team like a Napoli or even like an Inter, Your expectation isn't to win the Champions League. It's to win a Scudetto and maybe win the Champions League, right?
The expectation is higher, but he also has more there. Whereas, listen, if he comes to Napoli, or if he goes to Inter, the point then is, okay, but you know, you still need to win something, and you don't have the strengths that you would have at these other clubs.
But I mean, you're also. I feel like if you would come to Serie A, any team in Serie A, and that's not Juve, it'll be Messi versus Ronaldo again. So like that might be, maybe he might be interested in doing that. I know one can dream. And then there's also people fantasizing about him joining Juve and playing with Ronaldo. So it's going to be interesting to see how this pans out.
That's already going to happen. So
that's what would happen if he goes to Juve.
That's already been confirmed that Juve are not going for him, and they couldn't. They can barely handle the Ronaldo wages at this point. So it's not happening. So we can breathe that sigh of relief. But
the thing with Juve is they needed to win the Champions League to keep that Ronaldo, to be financially stable with Ronaldo, and they haven't. So they're already in a lot of problems themselves. But the thing is, okay. The thing is with Napoli, like, I'm with you. I said yes, jokingly. I know he's not. There's no way in hell he's coming.
Always a chance, but maybe just a very, very small chance. Like,
Sarah, you're talking about 1 in 7 billion right now.
Like, less than 1% chance, and I think that's even phrased too generously. I think people would want me to say like there's maybe 0.2% chance. I mean, it's just you can make the case that it's really between City and PSG at this point.
Probably,
and
yeah.
Even a team like Inter, I mean, the chance of that happening is maybe at this point like 5 to 10%.
Financially, can Inter sustain them? That's the thing that I'm thinking.
Apparently, they can, but. Well, Messi, I don't see it happening.
Like a Messi will, like, honestly, I don't understand. Like, if you sign Messi, you sign, like, I don't know, hundreds and hundreds of millions of Messi fans that are going to, you know, buy jerseys and become fans of your club.
See, here's the thing, though. I like the way our club is set up with the passionate fans that we have already. Now, I understand the marketing aspect of it is important, but it's like a certain point where you start to become like Juventus. And I don't like that.
Also, keep in mind the whole point about shirt sales, stuff like that. They said that about Ronaldo with Juve, and they're still struggling on that front now. So, you know, that only gets you so far.
But Juve also has to buy Ronaldo. Like, Juve, what, they spent 100 and something million euros on him to buy him.
Something like that. Yeah.
You with getting the money on a free different. Buy a Messi. Even if he makes, what, 30 million a season, 30 million, if you sign him on a 3-year contract, that's like, what, 90 million euros. It's, you know, do the math. You're saving on buying him.
Yeah, but the
wages.
This
is why you guys are better at stuff like, you know, I've never played it, Football Manager and stuff, when people throw around these sums.
Yeah.
You guys are better at that.
With Barcelona with 700 million euros. But, yeah, his buyout clause was 700 million euros if you want to buy him from Barcelona. So the only reason why he's able to leave right now is because, and I was saying this even before he even said that he wanted to leave, I was telling everyone, I'm like, listen, if Messi wants to leave, you don't have to buy Messi from Barcelona. But he has a clause in his contract that after every season, I think there's 2 or 3 weeks that he can opt out of his contract to become a free agent. So that's basically what he did right now.
But Barcelona are arguing that's null and void at this point.
But technically, I think FIFA has the rule that because of COVID, it's that like that got pushed, and it counts to the end of the European season, which was in August. So I think it's going to be probably not a fast decision. I think. There's going to be some legal disputes and things like that, but if I had to put money on it, I think you'll probably see Messi wearing light blue, but in Manchester, not in Napoli. He's going to go back
to
be with Pep. Going to play with Pep.
It's, so it's definitely a fantasy.
Yeah. My phone is at like 5%.
Yeah.
So I'm going to lose you any minute. But
yeah, yeah, actually, we ran this one a little bit
a little bit longer
than what we usually do. Yeah.
It was a special wrong with that.
But you know what? Like you said, nothing wrong with that. I just want to thank you again for taking your time and coming on with us.
Thank you.
I really do appreciate it.
Thank you, Phil.
Thank you, guys. I'm honored to be asked. I love being able to do these and, you know, happy to come on in the future. And obviously, whenever you guys, when, you know, things are different in the world, whenever you guys make your way down to Philly, you'll obviously have to catch a match with us at the cafe. And I hope to, I've only been to Toronto and not even technically Toronto. I was in Saga, I guess, at the airport twice for connecting flights to and from Italy. But I want to visit Toronto one of these days. So hopefully I'll be able to catch up with you guys up there, hopefully during the season. I think I've always said that I would want to go to Toronto probably in the spring would be ideal.
Don't come in.
Yeah.
Don't bet on me going up there anytime even close to the winter.
No.
Yeah.
In the summer. Come during the Euro, man. Hopefully next summer things are a lot more normal.
So I'm going to be in Italy at least during part of that.
Okay.
That's the plan at least. But I would love to be up there for that because the things that I've heard about the Italian Canadian community. It seems like a pretty incredible experience. So might have to get up there for part of the tournament.
Well, yeah. Whenever it is, you're always welcome to watch with us.
Well, thank you.
Always.
Thanks.
I got to go down to Philly and watch a Flyers Leaf game. Hopefully I don't get beat up by the Philly.
You can work it all out, and you could also, you're a basketball fan too, right?
Yeah. I like basketball. I like the Raptors.
So I couldn't care less about basketball and hockey.
I know.
But I ironically go to like one Sixers game a season. It's this thing that I started a couple of years ago. And I remember when the Raptors won it all. What was that? Two seasons ago?
It was last year.
Last season. Year. City was out of commission for 3 days.
Yeah, no, it was like a national holiday.
That's where, you know, I don't care, but I'm a competitive person, as I'm sure you can tell. So all of the Toronto guys that I know just ragging on Philadelphia, you know, that made me sort of really want the Sixers to do something. So, you know, maybe sometime down the line, the Sixers will beat the Raptors and will win another championship. I really won't care other than being able to say, you know, we beat Toronto. So
yeah, the Sixers struggled in the playoffs this year. What I think they got swept.
I think they did.
By the Celtics, they got swept. And we play the Celtics tomorrow. So
yeah. So, well, if we play the Celtics
tomorrow. Yeah, that's true.
If there's a Sixers-Raptors game at some point during the season, you'll have to come down and we'll catch two games.
We'll plan that out for sure. Anyways, thanks again, Phil.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you more. I'm honored.
Take care, Phil.
Thank you.
Forza Napoli.
Ciao. Forza Napoli.
Ciao.
Ciao.